Hi, welcome. Welcome to Tuesday, November 1st. Amazing. Live with Linda and friends. I just got back from the most amazing nursery because now it's time for me to start adding flowering plants to our wonderful property. So I want to say hi, Victoria. I see you. Connie, hi. Jewel, hi. Katrina, Dorothy, hi. And Marnie, I'll make you co-host. Kirsten is in a teacher's meeting for a while. So make you co-host here. There you are. Great. Huh. So welcome. I want to talk about miracles today. And I just posted something that is a miracle. Actually, I'm going to wait until we get a few more people on because I know there are more coming and show you a video of the manifestation of my prayer. And then just see what comes up because I know Sage had another wonderful experience she wants to share. So I would like to, Dorothy, remind me, you were here the last time, right? Just remind me again till I get to know you, where you're from and how you got, found us.
Okay. I am in BC.
Oh, wait a second. Could you hear me talking?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Dorothy.
I'm in BC, Canada, on Vancouver Island. And last week we focused an hour on my situation, which I was blown away. That was beautiful. My issues with my dog have been ongoing for 5 years. And this week I got the version of the two body wrap books. And so I started using the body wrap because yesterday in our area, for some reason, we have fireworks for Halloween, which is really a stupid time for fireworks. But anyway, so they were on last night and she always becomes a quivering mass with the fireworks. So she still was quivering, but I used some tea touch on her and also used head wrap and the first body wrap, just the front of the body, and she's liking it. I took her for a walk to the beach yesterday and thought, well, I won't put the head wrap on, but I'll leave the body wrap on. I thought it would be fine. We just won't, because she usually goes swimming. But she decided to go in the water anyway, so the body wraps is already looking a bit shaggy. I'm just using a face bandages at the moment. That's what we have. But anyway, I'm just so stoked on all of this, and I've been reading and watching videos, and I was trying to get I was trying to get the recording of this this class last week, and it's not. So I don't know how, at least I couldn't find it. So
thank you very much. So
yeah,
I've been asking that that Kirsten send directly to everybody the link for this, because it's too challenging, I find, to get and to download it from our site. It's crazy. So I will make sure Kirsten will be on in a little while, and please help me, just remind me to talk to Kirsten and have you have her send it to everybody.
On the site, all I could find was the previous ones up to June of 2022, and the rest, nothing else. So I couldn't find the recent ones. That's where I was directed anyway. Anyway, that would be great. Yeah,
that's where you should be directed. Thank you very much. Great. So you're seeing a difference. And have you, since you put the first quarter wrap on, have you gone to the half wrap? It's just one more wrap around?
No, just getting into that. Yeah, I think I have a feeling that because she's can be sensitive in the rear end, I think I need to get into that part too. And just, yeah.
And it's actually not on the hindquarters. It's just one wrap a little farther back. It takes it so it's over the loin and doesn't have to go any, in my experience. I mostly use the quarter wrap like you did to start with, and then the and the half wrap. So I want to welcome Nancy and Angela and Harriet. Hi. And Simila in Italy. Hi. And Sage, we're going to hear your story. Anna is here. Hi. So any chance for the next week, Dorothy, that you could just take a little short video with you doing tea touch on your dog? And then it's so easy, you know, just to do a little coaching here and there.
See if I can get it accessible. That's the challenge for me to put it on. Yeah. Okay.
It's always a challenge. So do you have a smartphone that can take videos?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Super.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to just begin by talking about miracles and how we access them. And one of the things that has been one book that has been a huge influence to me over many years is this little book. It's Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer, The Hidden Power of Beauty, Blessing, Wisdom, and Hurt by Greg Braden. And it's just such a wonderful book. And the fact is, actually, I stopped on page 90 because I got so much from it, I didn't need any more. And after I first read this, and it's very much in line with the teachings of the New Thought Church, the idea that we just say what it is that we need in our lives and hold, and there you just it's exactly the same as Ernest Holmes' concept. You just say thank you, and it is so. And so I mean I've been dealing like this, thinking like this for many, many years, but something struck me after I read this book. And I received a phone call shortly after, and normally if I'm teaching, standing in arena, I don't answer the phone, of course, but I knew I was supposed to. And it turned out that it was Dr. Janet Varhoos on the phone. She was calling from the mountains in Colorado, and she was desperate because her dog, who was older at that time and suffered from the heat when she got overheated, had disappeared on their ride. Suddenly, she just wasn't there. Janet was riding one of her horses in the mountains. And she said that she tried Reiki, she tried everything to call her in. And you know how it is, if any of you have ever lost a dog, it's just like, it's just the most horrible thing, unless you put out the prayer and you hold, she will be there. And I said, listen, stop being concerned. Just hold this picture in your mind that she will be safe and she'll be right with you. And at that moment, the dog walked up and touched her on the leg with her nose. And I've had so many experiences like this, just putting out to the angels, to divine spirit, to the dog, but it's really to angelic beings in our lives and the divine within. And so I had one of those many miracles again 2 days ago. I'm going to show it to you. I'm going to screen share. I'm still so excited. Okay, screen share. And I'm not going to share the sound because I want to talk you through it. So you see this video of sandhill cranes. And we have a pair in the Jupiter Farms, and sandhill cranes mate for life. And these two have been around for many years, and I have passed them about a month ago. They were just grazing in a ditch on the side of the road, and I was so excited and stopped and talked to them. And I passed that same corner a couple of days, like 2 days ago, and I just thought, wait a minute, I wonder, what do I have to do to ask them to come to our 2 acres? Because as you can see there, we have a lot of grass and a lot of stuff. And that's all I thought. And the next morning, I was in the pool, and I just was doing exercises and spinning around, and this head popped up, like just outside the pool. And so I carefully, slowly got out, and these two were like maybe 40 feet away grazing. And so I got my phone out, and I started.
Believe in miracles.
I don't want the sound. So I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, I just put it out there, the possible, and I go with the infinite possibility, this concept that, you know, if it's meant to be, now let's see what happens. And so here they were. So look, you see the one with the head up, just looked in my direction and then looked away, and then starts walking slowly in my direction. Slowly. And actually not in a straight line, but kind of doing a weave like dogs do when they're checking something out. And look at the tilt of the head. And see, change directions. You know this way dogs approach. Oops, speeds up a little bit. Oops, changes direction again. Oops, head up a little more. And then look, then the other one is alerted. Oh, I should turn the sound on. And then that one starts like jumping up and down and dancing, and then started vocalizing. Isn't that amazing? Now they're both coming in my direction. They're now about 30 feet from where I'm standing. I was so excited.
To go away, I think they're telling me.
So at this point, I started really slowly, because I hadn't moved a muscle except my mouth a bit. I started slowly backing up. Now they both jump up. That's how close they were.
Look how close they are.
With each step back, they got quieter. And it's really still. You can't hear anything except the fountain at the end of the pool.
I'm going to start backing away and see if they will settle down. And go back to getting learned or whatever they're getting.
But some animals, you could like hum or sing or do some gentle movements, but man,
back into the pool.
Trying to be invisible. And then they went back to grieving. And this is just such a gift of what happens, you know, when you hold that prayer. And it was so beautiful because I posted this on Facebook. I didn't know how many people would watch it for actually 4 minutes, but so far I've got 614 people and many, many, many comments and some wonderful stories about the messages that birds bring to our lives, various birds. And for Eugenie Chopin in South Africa, she told a really wonderful story that I posted up above, because she was questioning whether her prayers for friends in need were working. And she, let me see if I meant to just pull that up a moment. How can I do this? Actually, you know what? I'm going to have you tell your story, Sage. And while you're doing it, I'm just going to pull that little story up of you, Eugenie, because it's really interesting. And it's related to my question about what was the meaning of the armadillo that gave me the gift of running up and touching my foot like about a month ago, and then just going back and continuing to search for ants. So Sage, and then I'm going to invite any of you who think about just this thrilling, what some people would call coincidences, which there's no way. And when I was talking about this with Eleanor a couple of days ago, and you know, this concept, the more we recognize the miracles, the more they happen. And for me, it's part of quantum science, because holding the infinite possibility, not just me, it means for me, if it's right in this situation, if it's possible in this situation, that's good for everyone, it will happen. And so Sage, share with us your story. Oh, I have to make you co-host. I'm going to stop my share and making you.
I don't think I need to be a co-host. I can just blah, blah.
Okay. So you didn't take a video. Okay. Because you were too busy.
No, I did take a video, but I'm not sure that it's going to be helpful for everyone, because it's watching a deer pass away. And I mean, I'm happy to share it. If you would like to, I took two videos, and you're actually the inspiration of me capturing some of those more difficult moments that are just incredibly beautiful. So I'm happy to share it, but I would need a minute or two to upload it to my computer.
Okay, so tell the story. And for me, being a support and witness at the end of life is one of the greatest gifts we can have in our lives.
Absolutely. And thank you for the invitation. Linda just called me. I was out on a trail walking our dog, and I said, you know, I've got to tell you this story sometime of this deer that I was able to be witness to yesterday while she passed. And she said, why don't you tell it today? And it was Saturday. I had been out walking with a friend of mine. We had been out in the woods, and I came back from the walk. James was at a Halloween party. He was playing music for young kids. And I'm a little distracted because Reggae decided to just drink a huge bowl of water. He does that about once every 2 days. He just drinks like a whole bowl of water. And then, you know, he drinks every so often, but all of a sudden he'll drink a huge bowl. Anyway, I was out for this walk. I was driving home from the walk, and my neighbor had called, David. And my neighbor and his wife, they teach wilderness education. So they teach people how to go out into the wilderness for months at a time and how to survive in the wilderness. And they moved in next door to us not that long ago, maybe a year ago. Anyway, I got a call from our neighbor. And it sounded something like this: Sage, I need your help. I need your help. There's a deer here. She's stuck in the fence. I need help. I tried calling James, but he didn't answer. Are you guys around? So I called him back. And I said, what's up? And he said, there was a deer that walked through our yard and she's caught in the fence. Can you help? And he knows that I work with the animals in a variety of different ways, with animal communication and shamanic work and the T-Touch work. And he said, can you come over and help? Well, I have to tell you guys, I wasn't prepared for what I was walking into. And it's still in my heart. It's still very much something I'm moving through. But imagine a rebar, wrought iron fence that doesn't have straight bars, but it has bars. It's decorative. It comes down and it gets wider in the center, and then they get skinnier at the bottom. Well, what had happened is he had spooked the deer by accident, of course. The deer ran through his backyard, tried to run through the wide part of that rebar. She got her front end through and her back end got caught. So the back end was on this side of the fence. The front end was on that side of the fence, and her pelvis was stuck at that small part at the bottom. So I walked in and I see the deer's back end sticking, you know, lying on the patio, and the front end, she's obviously in distress. It's a full grown deer. And on the way to my neighbor's house, I also saw her youngster. That was really difficult. I saw her yearling looking around like, where's mom? I don't know whether I did T-Touch or not, but what I do know is I got myself really grounded, and I'm called to doing work at end of life. It's a calling that I have. So David and I stood and we contemplated what do we do? I said, we've got to get her out. Regardless of what the end game is, we've got to get her out. And I said, are you attached to your fence? He said, not at all. I said, then we need to cut the fence. I said, but wait a minute, we've got to figure out how to cut it. And he had said that he had spent some time actually lifting up the front end of her body to give her a break so that she wasn't in such a state where she had been kind of collapsed down. And he had a really sweet moment with her. Anyway, I don't want to rush this story.
I just
need to make sure that we've got space for it.
Sage, what I'd like to say is taking the time to tell this story could be life-changing for some.
Absolutely. And
so it's an honor to honor the animal and all of us.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's the story is still percolating inside of me. I've been doing some writing since this experience. So David and I contemplated, what could we do? I said, let's try and bend the fence. He said, I already tried. I said, let's try again. And that there was no way. And of course, you know, going up near the deer, she was getting stressed. And so she was trying to move herself through the fence, which was making things worse. I said, hold on. I said, first of all, she needs water. Let's at least get her some water. And he got a bowl of water, and I had been talking with her. I had talked to her baby telepathically, and I said to her baby, your mama's stuck in a fence. She's not out of the fence. And when I came up to this mother deer, I said, mama, we're here to help you. I said, I need you to just know we're here to help you. And I said it out loud. And when I went around the fence to the front part of her body to give her water, I said, I'm here to help you. And she turned her head toward me and she just got really quiet. And I put the bowl of water underneath her mouth because I don't know how deer drink. They don't drink out of bowls of water like dogs do. And she put her face in the bowl of water. And then I realized she wasn't going to just start drinking. She was in such a high state of stress. So I pulled the bowl away and I just drizzled some in the side of her mouth, and she lapped that up. And then she clamped down really hard on the bowl and looked at me. And I said, I got it. And I backed away. And David and I decided we were going to try and lift up her back end to see if we could get the back end through this area. So we went around to the back and I told her again, here's what we're going to do. We're here to help you. And I used the back of my hand doing some orangutan, very light, like a one pressure tea touch on her haunches in the back on one side. And David was on the other side. She was still very able to kick. So we had to make sure we were safe. We tried to lift her up. She was way too heavy and there was no way. And I said, all right, we need to cut the fence. And I said, do you have a saw? And he said, yeah, I have a saw. But he said, if we cut here and cut here, she's going to jump through and she's going to impale herself on the fence. I said, we have to cut up higher. He said, well, my neighbor has a crowbar. I said, get the crowbar. So the neighbor comes over, and he had also called Game and Fish, of course, and the sheriff, and called the sheriff and said, we don't want to kill this deer. We want to free the deer, which, bless my neighbor for, you know, not wanting to just do something really quick. The deer was very healthy. And then there's this feeling of like deep grief of how humans mess with nature. If the fence hadn't been there, blah, blah, blah. You know, if the fence hadn't been there, if the man hadn't spooked the deer, all of these things that we do to intervene with nature. And so there was a forgiveness piece. And I talked to David about the Ho'oponopono. I said, you've got to forgive yourself. He touched a doorknob and it wiggled and it made a sound and it spooked the deer. And I said, you've got to forgive yourself. You did the best you knew with the skills you had at that time. So the neighbor comes over. Now we've got like the three stooges. We've got the animal communicator and we've got the wilderness guy and we've got the guy with the crowbar. And the crowbar guy, he literally just kind of straddled the deer and just took his crowbar and started to break the fence. And we got it broken enough. And I said, all right, cut the fence up high because then it will split apart so that it was wide, because she was stuck down in this skinny area. Her pelvis was caught. And so crowbar, we cut the fence. And just like, you know, you've heard the story of how when the cage door opens, sometimes we don't leave the cage. So this was open and she still stayed there. And I didn't know, was her back broken? Could she move? We didn't know what kind of shape she was really in. So I went around behind her again and I spoke to her again and I said, you're free. You're free to go. And I said the Ho'oponopono to her. I'm sorry. Please forgive us. Thank you. I love you. And I took some water and I just dribbled it on the ends of her hooves, thinking that that sensation might naturally get her to move forward, and it didn't. So I took my foot up against her haunch and just gently moved it over so that it was just inside of the rebar, so that she realized more that she had freedom, and she released herself and her back legs weren't working. So she tried to get up and she couldn't get up. And that was hard. That was really hard to watch. And yet she landed herself down in the grass and lifted herself up on her elbows and looked around like, okay, well, I guess this is what's happening now. Rather than flailing and distressing, and the sheriff came and my neighbor said, I don't want to dispatch her. I want nature to take its course. And this animal, you guys, she wasn't in distress. I don't know how to describe it other than, of course, she was in some kind of distress. But I think there's different levels of distress. And because this was on my neighbor's property, it was, you know, essentially a decision that he was making for himself and for this animal. And anyway, so I left. It was about 3 p.m. And I thought that she would just pass away like within an hour, given what I was seeing. That was Saturday. Saturday night, I couldn't let it go. I called James, you know, an hour later. He was just finishing a gig. And I said, I need to clear this. I need to talk through this with you. And I talked it through. And at about 7 that night, I hadn't heard anything. And so I went back behind the neighbor's house. I, you know, walked along the fence line. It was dark out, and I took a flashlight and I could see two eyes. And I didn't know, honestly, and I'm learning whether eyes that are still alive glow and eyes that are dead, do they glow in the dark? I didn't know. So I really appreciated that part of me that just didn't know. I came back home and I said to James, I think I saw her ear flinch and I think I saw her blink, but I'm not sure she's alive. So we prayed, and that's something that we do every night. We pray for everyone. That's the last thing before we go to bed. We say, let's pray for everyone. So we prayed for the deer, and we prayed for her child, and we prayed for everyone. And I woke up the next morning, and when the sun came up and it was light enough, I went back to see what had happened. And I think that's part of the human condition, is the need to know, being curious. And she was gone. The gate was closed and her body was gone. So I didn't know if the neighbor had done something. I didn't know if an animal had taken her. We live in the middle of a national forest, and there was a mountain lion across the street a few days ago. So I didn't know what had happened. And I waited through the day, and the neighbor called in the afternoon and he said, she's still with us. She crawled down the ravine and she's about 100 feet down, and she's really peaceful. She landed at the base of three trees right next to where I spread my father's ashes. And he said, Sage, she doesn't seem like she's in distress. She's just lying there and she's just kind of looking around, and her breathing is steady. This was Sunday morning. So this was almost 24 hours later. And I said, I know James would like to see her. Are you okay if we come down? So we went behind the house. We were about 100 feet away. We were long enough for binoculars to make sure that she felt safe enough with people around. And I had brought tobacco with me because I didn't know, was she dying? And that's in my spiritual traditions, the path of laying tobacco down as an offering to both Mother Earth and a dying being. So I had brought some tobacco, ceremonial tobacco, along. And James and I and David sat in the forest. His wife had left for an event earlier in the day. We sat in the forest about 100 feet from this deer, and we just communed for about 45 minutes, and we watched her breathe, and we wondered if she was still breathing, and all of those questions, is she still there? Is she not? It wasn't obvious. And we sang quietly, and we noticed nature starting to wake up a little more, and birds were starting to come in. And David said, sometimes that happens when animals are dying, that the rest of nature wakes up. And so we said a prayer, and we blessed, and we said the Ho'oponopono again, and we blessed the tobacco. And I placed mine on the earth, and James sprinkled his, and David blew his toward the deer, and we walked away. That was Sunday morning. And something didn't feel right by Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and we hadn't heard anything. And it didn't feel right for me to go traipsing back into the woods at night to just go look and see, was she still around? But it felt like she had died while we were there with her. Monday morning, this is almost 2 days later, David called me and he said, Sage, you won't believe this. Our friend is still here. He said, she's fading, but she's really peaceful. She's still in the same spot. And he said, I've got to go to work. So I went for a walk in nature. I was with a friend of mine and our dog, and I walked for about an hour. And I came home and I had a client in 20 minutes. And something was pulling me into the woods. And this is exactly, Linda, like what you were talking about, of just this pull that happens and listening to the pull. It was 10:40 yesterday morning, and I had a client at 11 o'clock. And my body said, you need to go to the woods. And it was 10:42. I was sitting 40 feet away from this mama deer. I had left our dog in our fenced yard, which I seldom do because we live in the forest. I left him in the yard and I said, I'll be right back. There's a deer that's fading right behind our house. I'm going to go check on her. So I walked back there. She was super peaceful.
And she was actually breathing really steady. And 10:40 came, 10:50 came. I sang to her at 10:50. I took a video of singing to her. And as I got through the second verse of singing, her breathing began to change. And she moved into actively dying, where her mouth started to open wider and her breathing became a little more labored. And I just sat in stillness. And then a deer came at the end, at the bottom of the ravine, and just held vigil at the about 100 feet down past where this deer was, and just stood there. And I texted my client. I said, I'm with a dying animal right now. I need to reschedule. And that was difficult for me in some way. And it was at first, but I had two clients. The second one was easier to cancel. And I sat in the woods for 45 minutes being with this deer. And at one point, I had this feeling, I need to go home. I know she's dying right now, but I need to go home. My dog is in a fenced yard. I can't live with the fact if something happens to my dog and I'm sitting over here. So I left and I said to the deer, I will be right back. And I came home. I took care of Reggae, used the bathroom, got him inside the house so that he was safe. And then I had a choice. I could hurry back to be with this dying animal, which is something that sometimes we do. We rush when there's this almost an urgency when someone's dying. But I took my time, not knowing whether she had left or not. And I was only gone maybe 5 minutes. And I went back down the neighbor's fence line and down through the pines. And as I started to get closer to where she was, and still I was maybe 40, 50 feet away, her body began to move in ways that I had seen my own dog die years ago. And I had watched my mother moving her legs before she passed, almost like she was riding a bicycle. And I watched the deer moving its legs and its mouth opening. And I knew that she was really close. So I stopped and I just sat down in the forest. And I took a deep breath and I just held my hand out. And I imagined the energy swirling up in a spiral, supporting this beautiful spirit. And did it, I remember doing that twice, just imagining this spiraled energy. And a wind came through and I heard wind chimes in the back. And you guys, I mean, it was such an incredible experience. And then she was gone. And I just sat there for a moment and it was so peaceful and quiet. In the moment right before she passed, there was this slight lifting up of her head and then gently placing it back down. It was such a quiet passing. And the deer that had been watching at the bottom of the hill got up, shook its whole body off, and walked away. And I let my neighbor know. I emailed him, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes later. And I said, she's gone. Our friend is gone. And I texted James and I said, she's gone. And I sat in the forest for, it was about 15, 20 minutes. And all of a sudden I heard footsteps behind me. And I turned around and I thought it would be James, my husband, because he said, I'm on my way. But it was David, was the neighbor. And he came and he just quietly sat down next to me. And then I heard other footsteps. And my husband showed up with a dozen roses. Bless his heart. Because what animal or person should ever die alone and not be honored? And so the three of us sat there and we just sat quietly with this deer in the middle of the woods. And eventually, James and I went down and we honored her and we put roses around her body and David shared a blessing. And it was such an amazing experience. I have never been with a wild animal in that capacity when they died. And I have to tell you, it was as incredible as being with my mother when she passed. So thank you for asking for the story, Linda, and thank you for the permission to just allow me the space to draw it out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Heart hugs to you and the deer and the rest of you involved. And one of the, for me, like this gathering that we do every Tuesdays and then once a month on Sunday, this concept that it's the Tellington method for self-care, the spiritual aspect and the realization and the opportunity to share various experiences around changing addresses, as the Hawaiians say, about what we normal Westerners call death, and beginning to realize, I believe our animals, I mean, our dogs and our cats particularly, because they live for such a short time, gives us the practice of slowly learning to realize that actually that passing is a gift and being in a place of support and non-judgment. And it takes practice. It's such a beautiful experience. And there's a book, and I can't find it. You know, that what you imagined, you were imagining by the swirling of the energy as she left, that is described in a second book by Dr. Raymond Moody about the experiences of caregivers who are there with the passing of people and actually having that experience of feeling like they're seeing that energy, actually experiencing a presence of the energy leaving the body. And in that moment, what is fascinating for me in that book is that what was a common experience is that the person in attendance with no relationship to the person, these were rarely family members, they would see actually those experiences that have been described of the last, like your whole life passing before you. And the validation for that was seeing things about that person that they would have no way of knowing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that you imagined that. I think it's
One thing I need to say, Linda, it was like that swirling energy began and then I became a part of it. It wasn't something that, you're right. I was not sitting there going, okay, now I'm going to conjure up spiral energy. The spiral energy was there. And then I noticed it. And that was a first for me. And it was the if I had to put a space on it, it was about 40 feet wide and spiraling that big. And it started at her body and it was going straight up. And so it wasn't, you're right. So thank you for, I didn't imagine it. It was there and I became aware of it and became a part of it. The other thing I wanted to mention that was fascinating to me, for 2 days, no other animal came to take her life. And I'm really curious about that because this was an injured animal in the woods. We have coyotes all over. We had a black bear in the neighborhood recently. We've had a mountain lion across the street a few days ago. We could smell her body from our house across the, that's fascinating to me. And I'm wondering, does the animal kingdom have a sense of respect of allowing that process to take place naturally? And once it's complete, then they go in and eat the body.
I mean, that's a really important question, actually, in terms of everything that is unseen. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for sharing that. And I would just like in my, like this prayer that I did, which was a question, what's the infinite possibility, if it's right, for these, I didn't even think that, but that's part of who I am, if these cranes would come to us. And this thing, this is, you could see that as the spiritual side of the work, because with T-Touch, we're talking basically about a physical presence. And yet the emotional and the spiritual is every bit as vital to our survival. Vital that we share these things. And in the Western world, I don't, the fact that death is rarely wanted to be talked about, it's something that it's, as our spiritual teacher, Auntie Mahalani Henry said, there's, and you've heard this before, there's one absolute law on this planet, and that is you just don't get off alive. And recognizing that and seeing the gifts of it are really worthwhile. I had the great honor of being with my dad for the last, you know, month of his passing after an amazing lifetime of 93 years, and then being with him with his last breath, and then actually preparing his body, Roland and I, cleaning him and dressing him, and actually putting, because it was 2:30 in the morning, putting a little like a little my color on his cheeks so he looked like, and then we put a Hawaiian shirt on him and a lei. And when his friends and family came to visit him, while we had the funeral arrangement just wait, was an amazing experience. So I would like in this presence of this energy, this knowing, I would like to know if you have anything that this brings up for any of you, like the cranes, the magic, these miracles that happen, or anything around passing that you would like to share at this time. And you know the thing, you just go to the reactions and put your hand up if you would like to share a story, a miracle. Hi, Sandra, I see you now. Marnie.
I'm not sure I should do this. Mine is pretty tough. I don't know. Over the years, being involved with shelters, there have been different ways of euthanizing animals. That word is not the right word. And I don't know if I should do this. I don't know, but we had a...
So hold on a second, Marnie. Let me just ask, is there any of the group who would rather that we not talk about that? Because it's something that we all can make a difference with all animals who are in the position where they are euthanized. We can, just from how we choose to support the souls of those beings who are leaving, and the people, the vets who have to do this, because it's a really big deal in the animal world. Many, many, many people have trouble with this if they don't have a spiritual understanding. And if you do, and you realize it's a part of the seasons, and it's not a pleasant thing to do, but we really do need to have a look at this and support the people who are having to care. And it's a hard discussion. No answer as far as I'm concerned, but it's something. And if this is disturbing to you, all you have to do is just put your hand up. And if you'd rather not go there, my next possibility is just to hear from the miracles. But it's I think, Marnie, it's such an opportunity for us to choose to make a difference by how we understand, hold that in our hearts and process it. But it doesn't have to be now. So how can I support you, Anna? Because I see that it's very hard for you. Hold on a second. I'm just watching Anna.
Excuse me, this is Sage. I'm going to interject, which I normally wouldn't just jump in like this, but today is Day of the Dead, and it's the time of the year when the veil is the thinnest.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So this is apropos. Absolutely. So, you know, I say let's see how this moves through, and just bringing in all of the ancestors, those that we have lost, let go of, the animals, the people. This is the time when the veil is the thinnest. This day is the day. So,
and it's incredibly difficult for the average Westerner because they've, you know, we have a different understanding of that transition than the concepts of the Day of the Dead, which is a celebration and making sure that they're always remembered. So Anna, are you okay? Could you just maybe do some heart hugs for yourself? And I want to support you.
You might misunderstood Anna, because I think she was for it. Can you not, if you agree with me, Anna?
It's not a question of for it. It's hard.
No, she seemed like she wanted to participate.
Thanks, Kirsten. I was just seeing, I know that these things are really close in your heart. And I'm going to do heart hugs and pretend that I'm there with you, Anna.
I am totally with Sage. This, to me, I tell everybody, do you know what May Day is? Right now, Samsung is right in the middle again between when the day and night are equal, autumnal equinox. We're going to go into winter solstice, and right in the middle, right now, is this essence to honor all, everyone we've loved and connected with. This is the days of the dead, this little window. And it's an honor, because you realize we call them dead. I see it as moving into another dimension. And
right. The
memory stays within our souls, our spirit. I love it. So I am totally here and Sage. My computer, I don't pay attention. Before you know it, I should have charged up with the cord, and all of a sudden I disconnected. So thank you, Sage, for sharing. That was absolutely incredible, because yesterday on Bainbridge Island, they completely block off the main road, and all the children, everyone dressed up, and I saw it as a celebration of all existence. So anyway, I'm letting go. Thank you.
Blessings. And Marnie, I think it's perfect on the Day of the Dead.
Well, it is amazing that it is the Day of the Dead, and that's an amazing day. When you say the Western culture doesn't do it all that well, that includes the fact that we don't deal with our population of too many animals, and maybe it's a way of sweeping it away. But over the years, some of the ways of doing it were pretty horrifying and extraordinarily hard on the people that were having to do it.
Yeah,
and it wasn't animal by animal. It was sort of group. I mean, the whole thing was pretty awful, and it was very hard on people. And I do a lot of political animal advocacy stuff in Austin, and we fought very hard to change the culture here about it. And this is a while back. And I also knew the veterinarian very well that was involved, and we succeeded in changing Austin's way of doing things, and that it would be done individually. We were so into it that it's not funny, but we municipal funding is has to be there in order to do something, including changes. So there was none, but we had finally won this battle to make it not be this sort of group, pretty awful. But and so what happened is that out of our weekly tea touch classes, people came forward and volunteered to help. So that because there was no funding to hire people to help this, and it is more labor intensive. But it was so extraordinary because we used Tea Touch. We were able to, there was something so special about one by one honoring that creature. I've never been through anything like that, obviously. Most people haven't. This went on until they got the funding, but people were amazing too. And they wanted to even learn how to do it so that they could prevent them from having to go through the awful way of doing it. And they danced around it. This veterinarian was Tommy, but he taught them how to do pull blood for heartworm preventive. I mean, he acknowledged what they wanted to do to help. That's how desperate people were to change this sort of mass whatever. It was awful, but it was the biggest privilege ever of being able to be there, do a tea touch on the animal and honor each little soul that left. I mean, it was not easy, but it also helped the people that had to do it too. I mean, it was an amazing experience, and it was one that kind of changed all of us. Anyway.
Marty, I have a question about that. Is there any way, like, that legacy that could be passed on in vet schools, is it still continued?
What do you mean?
Of this way of honoring the animals that they're euthanizing, because it's a desperate situation for those still who have to do it.
And it's not improving, but I mean, that's the thing. We're not making all the progress we thought we were going to make, where that there would be fewer and fewer. And that's an amazing idea to look at. And most vet schools are so busy teaching how to, you know, heal or whatever, that they don't... they would even say they don't have the room and time and curriculum, but that's not true of all of them. I mean, I think some people would be extremely interested in that thought. Wow.
But we could set up something separate that's free that they could take as an aside. I mean, we certainly had that at the University of Hanover Vet School and the University of Vienna. That's how TeaChUCH was taught as a, you know. Wow. An elective outside of the regular course, but totally supported by the.
Well, in this day of webinars and
right.
Zoom and everything, this would be amazing tools to help that happen. Wow.
And we could get some of our vets who are behavioralists who do these things all the time to actually, you know, be involved, because
yes.
From another vet and honoring what Tommy did.
Well, and one of the things that he said and we said from the beginning was how extraordinarily how it not only honored them, but it was physically much easier on them all around. I mean, I hate to say it, but it was smooth. There was no, had the ability to help them with the struggle and the fear of who are these strangers? And you're not a stranger with T-Touch. and and who, you know, who are putting me in a, I mean, it was, I hadn't even, because it also helps people that have to do it, hugely helps them.
That's what I mean, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and in spiritually, but also actually physically, whatever you call it, you know, I mean, it's so much easier procedure when you use T-Touch.
Right.
And maybe that's tough for people to hear, but it's a huge gift to be able to hold them and do T-Touch on them at their passing. It really is.
Support them.
Yes.
In the transition and yeah, seeing it yeah. as not as death. That is
yes.
the point. It's right. not the end.
Yeah. Wow. That's
the biggest thing to understand.
I haven't stopped and thought about this in a while. Ooh.
So we have, you know, in our trainings now in Germany, we have quite a few behavioral veterinarians. And this is at least to start with a chapter that Danielle Azur could bring in her second book for vets, T-Touch for in the veterinary medicine. So let's talk to her. And all of you, what I want to say about us being present here, and even though, Sandra, you have to be doing what you're doing, you're still, all of you, just holding your presence here and calling in the angels of all these animals and all the people who have to be part of this process, because we have too many animals. And for me, it's just holding this process. How can we make a difference to the animals who are in transition and to the people who are having assigned to this? So I want to propose that, Marnie, and that I'll call you after and we'll send a letter to Daniela and see if we could collaborate with Tommy's work and have her bring it to the veterinary world.
That's amazing to think about. And I realized what Sage said about using Ho'oponopono, because we have failed all these animals. We should say it collectively for every time for something like that. But for the vets, I think that would be, well, and they don't know their place in all of this when they get going through vet school. You know, and it's more than just medicine. You're walking into a world that it's a little tough, and to help them be more aware and be more
prepared.
Yeah, prepared, there you go. Because they don't think about it.
No, of course not.
They don't, they're so busy trying to keep their grades up and survive. Yeah, right.
So, if we can just hold it a second, Sage. Dorothy has her hand up, and then I'd like Sage to actually tell the group what she's about to write. Dorothy.
Well, I just wanted to say, I think this must be for the vets, the big difference between euthanizing a dog, like we've had several of our beloved dogs pass with the help of a vet, where they came to our house and we held our animals and we sent them off to a perfectly healthy dog or cat or whatever. It's just simply being euthanized because there's no more room. And so I think that a big part of this is holding in our hearts the vets who have a very high suicide rate. For taking that responsibility for all of us to, in whatever way they can to help the animals. But I just think there's a big difference between a healthy animal and sending them off to an animal that's at the end of life or is so sick that there's, you know, that's the, seems to be the kindest path at the moment. But anyway.
Absolutely. And that is a really good point. We're not talking about the vets who are helping an animal pass because that's the best thing for their health, because they can't go on. But this is a very different thing. And it's a big issue. know, all around, because there are these people who really believe all animals should not be killed. I tell you, I think keeping an animal alone in a kennel for their years of alone and no people, I think that's torture. But that's my opinion. And I think it's personally much better to have a way to help them that's kind and respectful, to give them another chance at their next life instead of the torture of being alone in a cage for years, which is an alternative to not to euthanasia. So it's and for me, it's all about recognizing that we go through like the cycles of the season. You're born, it's like the spring, the summer, the fall, and then the winter. And you go through these seasons, and sometimes a lot of the fruit, you know, that falls, they don't seed. And that is part of life as we know it on this planet. Ava, before I ask Sage, I saw you. Were you trying to say something, or you're just joining us? Just joining us. Hi.
Hi. No, I was just listening. I had nothing to.
Perfect.
Nice. I agree with you.
Thank you. Yeah. For being here. Sage.
Marnie, thank you for bringing up this topic. I wrote in the chat this idea of praying for everyone, whatever your spiritual practice is. We used to make a list at night, and let's pray for so-and-so, they've got cancer. Let's pray for this dog that's having a hard time, blah, blah, blah. And the list got so long that one night I just said to James, let's pray for everyone. And what I do in my visualization, it's a visualization at night, as I envelop the entire planet with gold light. And just like this idea of we pray love instead of praying for love, we pray love for the planet. And to me, that will include all of these animals who are being euthanized and all of the veterinarians who are needing to make that decision, or the people who are making the decision for the animals, because I really believe that we do the best we can with the skills that we have at the time that we have them. So that's my invitation, is pray for everyone every night. Pray love for the planet, and it will infiltrate everyone. And I put a note that I'm teaching a T-Touch for Aging and End of Life for Dogs class on January 14th. It's through the If you go to learn.ttouch.ca, the course listing is in there. It's January 14th. It's from 10 to 3 Arizona time. So it's about a 5-hour class. And we discuss these topics, you know, what do we do when our animal is aging and nearing end of life, and these difficult conversations that we have with ourselves and with God and with the animal, and how do we navigate? So I'm happy to share that circle with you on the 14th, and I'm teaching it again April something or other, I think the 8th.
Perfect. Thank you, Sage, for sharing that. And yeah, I'd love to come on that day for a few minutes and share some of the experiences that I've had around that, because as we know, it's an interesting issue.
Absolutely.
So I would, Razia, hi, I'm sorry I didn't recognize you when you came in. Lovely to see you. I'd like us to take our 10-minute break. So it's 3:08 right now. I'm going to say that we come back at 3:20. We'll give us 12 minutes. And what I'm going to do is change the subject, unless one of you think of like a great story, a miracle that has happened to you. It doesn't matter when it was, just recognize it. So Sage, thank you for being here. I know this time is up for you. We'll see you back here. What I'm going to do, I'm going to pull up the video that we have, that you all have available. I'm just going to show you I've been meaning like every week to show you a part of it, to just remind you of some of the nuances of the various T-touches. So see you at 20 after, wherever you are. I will end this recording. Stop it.